First of all, thanks a lot for giving me the occasion to speak. This is actually the first time I'm presenting after my fieldwork for my PhD research on, more broadly, the theme of cooking and embodied knowledge and related themes of gender, consumption, and urban space in the Medina of Marrakesh in Morocco. I have worked mainly with the three lower middle income families of Aya, Fatima, and Rania. And in this paper in particular, I will focus on food spaces outside of the home, so market spaces in the Medina of Marrakesh. Okay. So rather than using a halal haram category, is
could you speak up?
Yeah. Okay. I'll lean over a bit. Rather than using a halal haram category for defining what are licit and illicit foods, my material argues for a local conceptualization of food consumption, which goes beyond Quranic prescription, and it's actually similar to the development of the global halal market in terms of its vastness of products it relates to. So whereas religious beliefs do impart a deep respect for the handling of food products in Marrakesh, I argue that it is not the halal haram binary that helps Marrakeshi cooks negotiate food consumption, but rather the local concept of beldi, literally from the country, and rumi, literally Roman or nowadays foreign. And for instance, mutton from a known breeder and butcher in one's rural hometown is considered more proper and better than from a certified yet unknown butcher in urban Marrakesh. I am conceptualizing this theme through a phenomenological approach to consumption. This means that I understand consumption as an embodied yet social practice. And to shop then, instead of relying on halal as indicating the lawfulness of food, a cook indexes food commodities as beldi or rumi, which she determines through bodily engagement, through her touch, her taste, smell, sight, and hearing. By contrast, normative Islamic food rituals, as Ben Khera has written about, are based on the distinction between one's mind, which is considered to be fully human, and on one's physical body, which is more animal-like, and whose appetites have to be controlled. And to approach these contradictions in this paper, I will first explore how religion matters in everyday food practices, second, how Marrakeshi cooks negotiate market spaces, and lastly, present the local beldi rumi concept of indexing proper food. So first, I ask, how do religious norms and beliefs inform daily food practices in Marrakesh? Well, the people I worked with constantly invoke the spirituality of food. So, for instance, the baraka of food means that you can share it, and generally food is considered to be God's grace. This means, for instance, in daily life that bread is not wasted but fed to birds or recollected for animal feed, or used in a leftover bread leftover dish called tarda. And I argue that the halalness of food products is taken for granted rather than used as a category. The aspect of halalness of food only came up when I specifically asked people. So when I asked Aisha whether all butchers in Marrakesh can be considered halal, she agreed with 100%, and she, rather than a ritual control, likens halalness to a quality control. She repeatedly said they're healthy. By contrast, vinegar, the use of vinegar in cooking is a bit more ambiguous. And Fatima, for instance, would just hiss her shoulders and say, well, what can we do? We have to use it. Aisha, by contrast, thinks that Moroccan vinegar is different from ours, from the European one. And Rania actually asks me to tell her what is halal vinegar and what is not. Despite these questions, overall, dietary laws are never actually elaborated on amongst my research participants, as they are in multi-faith contexts described by others. This doesn't mean that Islamic norms are not actively engaged with or reflected amongst these people. So Ramadan is fasting is observed by a very large majority, and here people do reflect on the dietary implications of Islam. So to control one's bodily desires, one aim is to control one's bodily desires for God, and it is about reminding oneself how precious food is and that not all people can eat how much and what they desire. And there's an active respect for food. So, for instance, Fatima's elderly mother, commenting on the slaughter of the Eid al-Kabir last year, a video that I had made, said that the ram's soul had no time to leave the body. So this means the butcher didn't pay him and God your respect by leaving no time. So while halal haram is an abstract concept for Marakshi cooks, proper ways of handling and processing food matter greatly to them and their families, and they are not restricted to what is prescribed by Islamic texts, but include most foods. The next section then deals with the question, where do Marakshi cooks shop and how do they do this? First of all, not only the people I worked with, but in general, people in the Medina shop on a mainly local level. So they would visit their local corner shop, the street market, or mobile stalls that crisscross the city on different times a day, or the souk in one's quarter. And by contrast to supermarkets, food products in the Medina have no packages, labels, or portions, and no halal labels, but an almost daily delivery of fresh produce, and at the same time, a fluctuation of prices based on availabilities, of which most consumers are aware, though. And to navigate these markets, cooks develop consumption tactics which rely on the body to assess food qualities. So several tactics to shop would, for instance, be to compare prices and quality between different food stalls and different market spaces. Aya, for instance, was very good at memorizing the prices within the day, but also of the previous days, and even in relation to season. And all of my research participants, whilst cruising through the markets in the Medina, were looking at and touching food and asking for prices, trying to match price and quality. By contrast, butchers, different than most vegetable or dry food product stalls, would have the prices fixed on signs, so there was no haggling over it. And different than many other authors have said, I would say that the way the market space is organized allows for comparison. Another tactic is building up relations of trust with shopkeepers. So Rania would always return to the same shop and speak Berber with the shopkeeper. And Aya would give alms to the mobile sardine seller that would come next to her house every once in a while. By contrast, if no relation exists, one has to beware of the tricking butcher. This was something that I learned quite often when I shopped for these families. And overall, I would say quality doubts are at work in most cases. So the medicine, dua in food, or pesticides, were an issue quite debated amongst my research participants. And to avoid consuming those products that are most influenced by pesticides, Fatima, for instance, would always smell food before she buys it. Another strategy that my participants resorted to was to maintain quite close ties with the family in the countryside, and thus have a different direct access to fresh produce. So for instance, Fatima's family owns lemon and olive trees in the Sus Valley, which are attended by their family and sent via bus in the respective season. And Aya, for instance, would always tell her mother to bring mutton meat from the countryside when she visited, and she would refer to the taste of the mutton as "you taste the blood, you taste the hometown." And this reminds very much of the scriptural idea that the consumer can trust the trajectory a halal meat takes on its way into the kitchen. And overall, fresh produce such as milk travel as gifts between visiting family members. And Fatima would always say, "It's the best. You simply know what's in there." And overall, I would say that the food provenance is an important part of the food knowledge of these people. So they are aware of harvest areas, of the impact of weather on harvest and prices, and overall are in the social gatherings of these women always a matter of discussion. Another important strategy is to process food. This is actually more important than cooking in order to control the quality of food. Fatima, for instance, would not expect things to be clean when she shops them. She would always process them at home, even though that might be time intensive. And very often, Fatima, for instance, would rather buy whole spices and process them at home. And all of my research participants would, whether packaged or not, always control especially dry food products such as lentil and rice, which require actually a quite intense bodily engagement with them because it's a very manual, tiresome task. And all of my research participants as well are buying grains for bread making rather than the ready-made ground flour and then bake bread or rather prepare bread at home. This is not only considered healthier, but simply better. And this is true even if women have little time because they work outside of the home, which two of the three families I worked with did. And interestingly, supermarkets in Marrakesh are trying to resemble open-air markets by allowing consumers to touch and engage with food. This is something that I observed in almost all supermarkets in Marrakesh. And now the third section is on tackling the question of how do then Marrakeshi cooks index proper foods? Which terms do they use to determine what is good? As far as I know, Rashik is the only one, and he has written about it on interior design, who argues that we have to account for how people name things themselves. Both urban and rural Moroccans distinguish consumption products, so beyond food, between Beldi and Rumi. And these are not in opposition, but form an essential part of daily life. I hope that gets clear in a moment. Similar to what we've heard in the morning about halal, argue that these terms also acquire contextual meaning. They depend not only on an urban or a rural perspective, but also on each person's historically and social context. And these names, Beldi and Rumi, allow to index food quality based on at least three dimensions. And I would say some of them remind of the Islamic dietary rules that we discussed earlier. So one is the origin of a food product. So Beldi refers to a product that comes from the country, but this doesn't mean country as in Morocco. It can be Morocco, it can be Marrakesh, or it can be one's home region. So it really depends on the specific context. And Rumi, by contrast, means foreign and from elsewhere. So that can be from the perspective of Marrakesh, even lentils from Fez. Another dimension is that of taste. So Beldi is associated with a very strong, noteworthy flavor, whereas Rumi has less strong flavor and a more average taste. And the third dimension is that of transformation. So Beldi refers to a homemade or homegrown product, whereas Rumi refers to a non-artisanal, industrially produced product. But one of the three can outweigh another. So for instance, a spice with a strong taste, despite being non-Moroccan grown, could be considered Beldi. And they do refer to quality, but neither of the two refers to just good or just bad quality. So this is actually in contrast to the halal haram conceptualization. And a couple of examples are, for instance, chicken. None of the families that I worked with buy actually Beldi chicken. The Beldi breed, which is thin and colored, is not only more expensive than the mass-produced white chicken, but it also has, as Aya would say with disgust, no meat. Beldi mutton, apart from being cheaper, and I refer here to the Beldi mutton that Aya would get from her mother in the countryside, is not only cheaper, but also considered tastier and richer, and as I said earlier, refers to the taste of the countryside. Rumia butter is considered Beldia butter for baking and cooking, but it's the contrary when you dip bread into this butter, then you would prefer the Belgia butter. And here, the butter from your neighbor in the Middle Atlas is considered to be better than the one from Marrakesh, where people fear it's impured or stretched with other products. Belgian lentils are considered better than Canadian lentils, Rumi lentils, but they do cook longer and take much more time to process than the Canadian one, and yet people prefer the Belgian one. And this concept also helps establish a relation with a shopkeeper. So by speaking Berber, you identify with a similar regional origin. And in supermarkets as well, Beldi is used, but only here for fresh produce, such as lemons, but not for products such as honey or argan oil, which for a Moroccan could also be Beldi. Not all foods have a Beldi Rumi variety, at least concerning my participants. This would be, for instance, potatoes or onions, but quite a large number of food products can be classified as such. Now, to conclude, let me repeat the three questions that I dealt with in this presentation. The first is, how do religious norms and beliefs inform food practices in Marrakesh, and where do these cooks shop and how? And lastly, which indexes do they use to name proper foods? So on the one hand, we've seen how cooks shopping for food are reliant on various tactics that are all based on the cook's ability to perceive and judge food products based on a bodily engagement with them through touching or smelling them. On the other, Islamic dietary rules, and more broadly one's submission to God, require the subjection of one's body. And I really wondered what to make of such a seeming contradiction between the body as the subject of consumption and the body subjected to religious norms. I found throughout my research in Marrakesh that the qualities of food matter greatly to local ideas of what's proper food, where it comes from, how it is processed, who sells it, and what's in it. Hence, even though halal is not used as a category, it is engaged with in terms of very, very, very similar markers of quality. And indeed, Ben Khaira showed how a food is licit if it is good, tayyib, and gives pleasures to the senses, tayyib. And in the North African context in particular, tayyib also means cooking itself, and tab refers to food that is cooked, ripe, mature, or edible. So a carefully selected, processed, and cooked food is proper and good food. And the more knowledge and hence control a cook has over the process of food consumption and preparation, the more it becomes proper food. To conclude then, in everyday food practices, abstract normativities of food, if understood as markers of quality as I've shown, are engaged with and negotiated through cooperation of a cook's body and mind, rather than one overcoming or controlling the other. And Beldi and Rumi, rather than the taken for granted halalness of food, are a contextual index that helps to describe and understand this negotiation. Thank you.